This episode is sponsored by Bible Bricks. They've created a brick building set of the Wilderness Sanctuary. Yes, the one from Exodus. With around 1,200 pieces, custom minifigs, and instructions that include Bible verses explaining each part of the tabernacle as you build. The set launches on Kickstarter May 6th, and if you put down just $5 now, you'll get $20 off when it goes live. Check it out at BibleBricks.shop or click the link in the description.
Hey guys, welcome to Seeking What They Sought. I'm here with Eric and Anthony and Sean. It's just us today. It's just us. And we're going to be talking about...
Just the boys.
We're going to be talking about the sanctuary doctrine today. Pretty much, if you have been Adventist, you either know a lot about the sanctuary doctrine, you know kind of what it is maybe, or you know nothing. And you're just like, what is that? I know I'm supposed to believe in it. We're going to be talking about this today. I mean, pretty much, I don't know about you guys, but the sanctuary doctrine for me was something I was never really talked to that much about. Like, people talked about it, but I never got like educated in it as a kid.
Like
I never
Sabbath.
Got like the I never got the indoctrination, right? So,
you feel like you didn't? Because I feel like I did. But it wasn't clear. It's like...
No, you're right. Now that you say that, I did. Yeah. I definitely did. Yeah.
It's like you're saying words, but you're like, what do the words mean?
No, actually, I never did.
Oh,
I was just going with you.
You were just...
No.
Oh, my word.
Starting a sentence and see where it ends up.
I never did. But you did, apparently.
I don't know if I... I mean, I was definitely... It was definitely brought up. It was definitely... spoken about in church and in school, but that doesn't necessarily mean it made sense.
I mean, yeah, I guess I knew the basics of it. So, you know, like there's a sanctuary, Jesus in there somewhere, something happened in 1844. Like that's what I knew.
Right.
Those
well, that's
things.
It. That's all you need
that's
to
it.
Know.
I mean,
let's end the episode right there.
We solved it.
Right. No, I agree. I think it was, one of those things he kind of like knew about, but was never really explained well or in depth.
Yeah,
it always just kind of to me felt like, oh, we messed up with our 1844 prediction, so here's like, oh, it was probably this instead.
Like, right. Yeah,
and
for sure.
I realize I'm sure it's deeper than that, but at a surface level, it's always I always kind of felt about it. I was like, it feels like the backup
it isn't, it
plan.
Isn't. It isn't. It isn't, Eric.
The cover story.
It's both
the cover story
and not at all. It's literally. Oh crap! Jesus didn't come back when we thought he would, and then
now
you know, walking through a field. Hey, I think we got the date right. I think we just got the thing wrong, and something happened that we can't see or confirm.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happened. So that's exactly what happened. So.
Yeah.
Yep. There we go.
So what are we going to do about it?
Oh, man. Well, that's
Eric. How are we going to solve this issue?
Eric like handed it to us as if we can solve.
Look, guys, I don't know what's going on. You guys are the theologians, so
that's
well,
fair.
Yeah. I know that I nowadays as an Adventist pastor, I mean, just to be honest, this is actually sort of serious. I'm going to also joke around a little bit, but like part of my thing on this podcast is I just want to be honest about where I'm actually at. And I think these days I'm definitely skeptical and there's a lot more of me. That's not a weird. There's a lot
skeptical on the sanctuary.
There is a lot more of you these
there's
days.
There's a lot more
Jesse.
Of me. I don't know what. I'm skeptical on the sanctuary.
Kids will do to you.
There's a lot more people like me that are, you know, hired by the church, like a lot of people in the circle of people that I've run into have questions, aren't quite sure about it, don't have the greatest perception of it. And they're like Adventist pastors and stuff. So I'm outing everybody and you'll never know. You'll never know who's just walking around. I'm telling you, but you'll never know actually who. No, I mean, it's actually kind of wild because you guys have told me this, and I never thought of it this way until Sean and Anthony, you guys said this. I think it was you, Sean. Mm-hmm. You said the Sanctuary Doctrine is the only truly unique Adventist doctrine.
Yeah.
Which is pretty interesting because we have our five distinctives. I guess no, but like Spirit of Prophecy is unique, isn't it? But anyways.
I actually don't know if I agree with that, but we can carry on.
Shut up.
Agree with which Spirit part?
Prophecy.
I don't know.
Hold on. We got Spirit of Prophecy, Sanctuary. Those are the two that are like definitely different. Then we have Sabbath, State of the Dead, and Second Coming. So Sabbath, State of the Dead, and Second Coming are definitely more accepted in other contexts. Yeah. But those two, Spirit of Prophecy and Sanctuary, seem to be like the two like definitely distinctive beliefs within Adventism. And so anyways, that's pretty interesting because Sanctuary is one of those things that I think a lot of people are totally sure on it. And a lot of people are not bought into it. And there's a lot of people in the middle who are just kind of like, I don't know.
Yeah. It's the most divisive.
Yeah.
So for the people who are even further removed than me, maybe can you give us a really brief overview of what the Sanctuary Doctrine is? Just to start out, just like a really basic framework.
Anthony, you're the theologian.
Oh boy. I mean, I think probably what's most helpful is if we base it off of the actual statement.
Is that a bud?
Wow.
She's drinking a Bud Light right now.
That was actually
Arnold Palmer, to be clear.
That was a perfect like soda can hiss pop open.
It was a
sound.
Good sound. That it was a good commercial stop. Sound.
Guys, I've been waiting for us to get into the most serious part of this conversation to just do that. I was waiting for it.
You're in one of those moods today. Jesse gets in these moods.
Anthony, our resident theologian.
Oh boy. I feel as if probably it's most helpful to like go based off of the statement from the Adventist Church, like fundamental beliefs. So
I have it right here if you want it.
Yeah, why don't we do that?
You want to read it off my computer screen?
Yeah, let me just dive into my own computer and come out in Redlands, California.
Pop your head out of my computer screen and look over at my monitor over here, if you could.
Let me go to that Google Doc. Okay.
Here, I got it. There is a sanctuary in heaven, the true tabernacle that the Lord set up, and not humans. That's the first kind of claim. In it, Christ ministers on our behalf, making available to believers the benefits of his atoning sacrifice offered once for all on the cross. At his ascension, he was inaugurated as our great high priest and began his intercessory ministry, which was typified by the work of the high priest in the holy place of the earthly sanctuary. In 1844, at the end of the prophetic period of 2,300 years, he entered the second and last phase of his atoning ministry, which was typified by the work of the high priest in the most holy place of the earthly sanctuary. And it is a work of investigative judgment, which is part of the ultimate disposition. I feel like I skipped something. It is a work of investigative judgment, which is part of the ultimate disposition of all sin, typified by the cleansing of the ancient Hebrew sanctuary on the Day of Atonement.
I think you're good.
In that typical service, the sanctuary is cleansed with the blood of animal sacrifices, but the heavenly things are purified with the perfect sacrifice of the blood of Jesus. The investigative judgment reveals to heavenly intelligences who are among the dead, who among the dead are asleep in Christ, and therefore in him are deemed worthy to have part in the first resurrection. It also makes manifest who among the living are abiding in Christ, keeping the commandments of God and the faith of Jesus, and in him, therefore, are ready for translation into his everlasting kingdom. This judgment vindicates the justice of God in saving those who believe in Jesus. It declares that those who have remained loyal to God shall receive the kingdom. The completion of this ministry of Christ will mark the close of human probation before the second advent. How do you feel about that one, Eric? You any clear?
Can you explain it in baseball terms?
Sean, we'll kick that over to you.
Yeah. So there's this guy in first. He's.
I want to know where this is going.
He goes to heaven.
No.
He's got chewing tobacco. He's making signals over at the dugout.
I'm genuinely curious how you're going to make this.
Let's let him go. Let him cook.
this is the thing is like, it is so naturally complicated. Like it's a very unapproachable doctrine. And you know, we're not we're not trying to make a claim about its validity or not. We're going to have a conversation about that. But it's naturally very difficult for us to make it make stepping stones to progress forward and understand. Like we talked about our background when we learned about it, we didn't really know what we were learning about, you know, whether we were kids or in high school, college, like it just, it's such a difficult thing to grasp. And we found this when we actually surveyed you guys on Instagram, and there were about half of you, maybe a little bit more than half of the people that we surveyed that said, yeah, I agree. And I believe in the sanctuary doctrine. And then we had about, you know, 10, 15% that said outright no. And then we had about 35, almost 40% say unsure. And, you know, that's really interesting. I think that's kind of the place is there's definitely some division, some lack of confidence in what it really is. And even some that have outright said, no, you know, there's a lot of history behind why that is. You know, you think of Desmond Ford, you know, in the history of, Glacier View and what happened back in 1980, there was this split within the church when it came to specifically, you know, like the investigative judgment. And I know that that's one thing was we want to approach this in a way that hopefully makes sense as we break it down. And potentially it's going to be quite a few episodes when we go through this. This is not just going to be a one-time thing as we talk about how do we explain the sanctuary? Because if we look at that fundamental belief, when Jesse read that off, it's, there's so much there. And if you go to the, if you go to the fundamental beliefs, you'll see that all the texts that are being referenced, right? And so there's a long list there. And so what we're going to try to do is break it down a bit more, piece by piece.
Do you guys, just as like a fun little moment, do you guys want me to read off all the people who said no?
Yeah, we can just out them. Let's see. Evan Espacio.
Yeah, Ted Wilson. Wait. I knew he always wanted to say it.
Oh, my word.
Yeah, it's...
Imagine.
But imagine. That... Yeah, go ahead, Jesse.
Eric, to answer your question, Anthony?
What was Actually, it? I was going to say, Anthony...
What was your question?
Can
explain
you...
Explain in baseball terms?
No, but
I don't care about
baseball. Can you honestly just break it down into an elevator pitch of what the sanctuary doctrine is? Because that was a long statement that Jesse read.
Yeah, it's a lot.
It was hard for me to follow.
I understood every word.
And I am an exceptionally intelligent person, so for common folk.
Eric. I don't know why that sounded so condescending, where I'm like, you are Eric. I didn't mean it condescending. I'll try my best. So full disclosure, I feel like I'm still on the journey of learning how to articulate this in a way that makes sense. And because I actually don't think it's ever been articulated in a way that makes sense. And I did not understand it at all until seminary. So
are you saying that the fundamental belief as it's written does not make sense in its articulation?
I think that there is a logical progression of thought, but I don't like how it... it's not in normal people language, clearly, because we're...
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it isn't for you, but I understand. I get it.
Well, I'm responding to Eric, the non-theologian. So, yeah, if I were to give an elevator pitch, I would probably say, hey, the main idea is that God has a way that he operates his government in the universe, and... He has certain mechanisms and certain ways that he uses to operate the universe and kind of maneuver to like work the government, the mechanisms, the systems of the universe, and in create, and that kind of like space is a temporal space that exists in a heavenly realm. And when God was interacting with humans, he wanted to dwell with people. He had a desire to be Emmanuel, God with us. And so he made a reflection of that space on earth to dwell with humans. And through that space, we learn a lot about the way that he organizes the universe and about his plan for how to solve the sin issue. And through that space, we learn about the Jesus strategy, the Messiah strategy, and beyond, and God's whole ongoing plan to show that he really is love. So that's probably a shortened version that I would probably say.
I think Eric got off the elevator like 10 seconds ago.
I took the stairs. No. That was much easier to follow. So
was it? Yeah. Because
I mean, it still has a lot of questions, but I feel like
there's a lot more. But that's probably what I would say.
More, you know, normal people language for sure.
Yeah.
Was it because it's like God has mechanisms by which he's got to jiggle the mechanisms of government. That was the language that you were using, Anthony. That felt like it was introducing a whole different concept into the whole thing. Because what I see here is not what you said.
No, yeah, that's why I think this language is not helpful.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, that's definitely a statement, and I think I tend to agree with you, Anthony. Even though, and for the record, as we do this little intro episode, is all four of us are in different spaces when it comes to how we feel about the sanctuary doctrine. And I think
let's talk about it.
Yeah, we should.
Yeah,
Eric, how do you feel about the sanctuary doctrine?
I mean, I think I already kind of said a little bit, but basically, I mean, to put it plainly, you know, I grew up Adventist. I feel like I was more educated than maybe, you know, the average Adventist kid in terms of, you know, our beliefs.
Yeah.
But I mean, I feel like I definitely don't have a good understanding of it. Like, I could not articulate it well. And I definitely couldn't articulate why it's important or how it's like meaningful. I feel like I could give like the basic idea of what it is, but not in any beneficial way. So I'm looking forward to this series and, you know, educating myself more and getting to know more about it, and then being able to make like an actual educated, you know, decision on how I feel about it.
Yeah.
For sure, yeah.
And I know we
Sean,
give you I know we give
been
you
on an interesting journey.
Yeah, I was going to say even before I get into that is I know Eric we give you a hard time, but I actually had a pastor friend, not obviously one of you guys, but when I kind of disclosed to him that we were going to do a series on the sanctuary and investigative judgment, he was like, "Oh, thank you. Like I've preached on it before, but I swear after about a couple weeks, I forget everything that I preached about it. Like I lose grasp on what it is." And I feel like that, I'll be honest, that happens to me too. I just feel like naturally there's so much to it.
Happens to me too.
That if someone were to ask, if it's not fresh on my mind where we've been studying or discussing it as a team or whatever, I'll just forget. Like if someone were to come up to me like a student or a church member and say like, how do you explain this? I would have to like pause and be like, give me a minute. I need to refresh. There's so much to it. Like if you tell me to talk about Daniel prophecy or like individually, because there's so many components of sanctuary doctrine.
There's so many components.
Like the investigative judgment. Part of that is the 2300 day prophecy, which is a larger portion of a bunch of smaller prophecies that go into that.
Yeah.
And then, you know,
there's Day of Atonement.
Yeah, there's Day of Atonement. So there's so many pieces that go into the sanctuary doctrine that it's easy to lose sight of like big picture, what is this all pointing to? And the challenge is, Anthony, I think you did a good job sharing what you did. And there's no knock against how you described it to try to summarize it. But the problem is if you go that big picture and summarize it that short, like almost by nature, I feel like it's impossible. Maybe someone can prove me
it's not the same thing. Like it's inherently not the same thing as written over here. What you said.
Is it though?
It's not the same thing. That's what I'm saying. It's not. Well,
and that's the thing is like and that's why I said full disclosure, I'm still learning how to articulate it in a major big picture way that I feel like communicates the heart of it that is avoiding the weeds.
That's what makes it more complicated is this doctrine, if you take again the labels of liberal and conservative, there are different interpretations within Adventism of how to apply this. You know, what's the emphasis on what's the takeaway practice for investigative judgment, for instance, where some will focus on the, you know, the concept of the Book of Life and the inherent fear that comes with like, you know, am I in the Book of Life? Is Jesus as high priest, like am I being judged versus the shift, you know, that's happened. I don't know if it's happened more recently, but we've been hearing more the pattern that it's about us investigating God, understanding God's character, right? And so there's division. I would say there's division in Adventism, which makes it even more difficult, is how do we interpret our own fundamental belief?
That's true.
And yeah. Even without that, it's complicated enough with all the different pieces. So going back to Jesse, what you said, my experience is growing up, I can't name one time before I started teaching post Walla Walla, post undergrad, that I really thought deeply about the sanctuary. And that was because I had a few colleagues, that brought it up with me, and we did Bible studies and went and dug deep into it. And that was the first time I was like, oh, this is something that matters, and I'm aware of it, and it's really compelling and interesting, and I want to learn more about it, and there's so much here. That didn't happen until, you know, 6 or 7, maybe 8 years ago, that really happened for me. And
so you're totally indoctrinated. You're sold out. You're like, you're in the cult.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely, I think both Anthony and I have had discussions.
You said that while receiving a paycheck from an Adventist institution. Your whole retirement is from the cult.
You're not wrong.
Yeah, I think my mind has continued to shift as I look at it. But I have maintained, and I've spoken with you, Jesse, I don't remember if it's been on air or not, but like, I have at least understood the fact that I have a hard time reconciling how Adventism can stand on its own without the sanctuary doctrine, and how it's an exclusive.
Yeah, I think you've said to me before that if we drop the investigative or the sanctuary doctrine, we don't have anything completely unique
on a doctrinal level. If we're talking social cultural, you know, that's its own thing. Yeah. But if we're talking at a very foundational doctrinal level, I don't see another reason to at least label yourself as an Adventist if you reject fully the sanctuary doctrine. Mm-hmm.
Which is really interesting because I see what you're saying, and I think we've disagreed on this, but I also get what you're saying though. Like if you're talking doctrines, it really, I mean, I don't know what your thoughts were, Anthony, on like other truly unique parts of Adventism theologically, but
I disagree with the statement there wouldn't be a truly unique reason to be Adventist without sanctuary doctrine, because I think from the ground up, the Adventist hermeneutic is fundamentally opposed to pretty much all of the history of Christianity. So to me, the very bones of the Adventist like way of approaching scripture is automatically divorced from and stands apart as a unique interpretive sort of strategy. Because they're all, we've talked a little bit about this before, almost all of evangelical Christianity, Catholic Christianity, going back all the way to the first century, like interprets the scriptures through a bunch of classical Greek presuppositions, whereas we don't. So to me, that's such a divergence in thinking that even without sanctuary doctrine, I think we would still be incredibly divergent from, we just approach the whole thing differently, I think.
Yeah, Sean.
Straight up.
Yeah, I mean, I see where you're coming from, Anthony. I would respond and say, I think as a byproduct, that's where sanctuary comes from. If we didn't have that approach,
I agree.
I don't think we would have sanctuary. And therefore, you know, if we didn't have, again, I think it's like, you know, chicken or egg thing. Like, could you really have Adventism as it stands, the way it was approached without the sanctuary as a lens for looking at pretty much everything else? The great controversy doesn't exist without the sanctuary. The authoritative, if you believe in Ellen White being authoritative, or even just, you know, as a prophet, whatever your spectrum of understanding of what the role of Ellen White in the church, you know, last day events, it all is just wrapped in to this concept of the great controversy, this way of reading the narrative concept, the big picture story of the Bible and God's character.
Meta-narrative.
I just don't know that Adventism stands with that piece of God's character being fully removed.
I think though, if you take
I
think if you take out the sanctuary doctrine, I think you can still get to all the same stuff biblically. Like that's one thing that I don't like, for instance, the sanctuary doctrine sort of led to,
and I feel like I would say the opposite way, that the sanctuary doctrine is biblically how we get to that stuff.
But I think that's how we got there. I don't think it's the only way to get there. For instance, we got to Sabbath, and then we get the State of the Dead through Sanctuary. There was like at least a couple of them that we got to some of our views.
Some key text. There's definitely some key text, but I'm forgetting the process of State of the Dead.
But I remember after the Sanctuary, some of our sort of distinctive things that came out of that come from the Sanctuary idea. But then, like, for instance, State of the Dead, which I believe is one of them, but I think it, or is it Sabbath? I don't even remember which ones it is. But I remember thinking when I heard that, I was like, no, but you can get to that biblically without the Sanctuary doctrine. You don't have to get there through that, though the Adventist pioneers did. And so that was an interesting, I don't remember. I think I heard it in a lecture one time and I was just like, oh, that's interesting. But that doesn't mean you have to have it.
You might be able to get to isolated beliefs. Doctrine like those, but to have a bigger picture where it fits within the puzzle, the way we view Sabbath, even though there's, because there's other churches that believe in Sabbath, right? Seventh-day Baptists, but the way we approach Sabbath, and this is a whole other conversation, right? If you think it's an end time marker for the remnant church, right? That we're not even discussing that here, Jesse. I'm just saying as a point that the lens that we viewed and got to Sabbath doctrine is much deeper than a standard, like isolated doctrine of Sabbath itself is like rest on the seventh day. It's deeper than that for Adventism.
Yeah, but also through the Sanctuary doctrine, we also got to like pretty weird views of the Sabbath as like a seal. You know, for like through that as a seal in the end for people to go to heaven, which inherently legalizes Sabbath keeping. I mean, I guess my point is that we get to good stuff, we get to bad stuff through it. And so I don't know if getting to those beliefs through the Sanctuary doctrine inherently makes it necessary in order to get to those beliefs today, if that makes sense. And I think that because pretty much what happened to me, I'll just kind of tell my perspective on this. I got introduced to scripture as like narrative, as like an overarching narrative that is going somewhere, not through Adventism, even though I recognize that was talked about a lot in Adventism, in Adventist circles when I was a kid. But like, I got to that through Calvinists, guys who were like, that we, you know, Anthony, I met this guy in a coffee shop and he invited us into something. He was a pastor. Medicine, like this group of pastors that get together. We're doing this like intensive thing and we're reading through something called The Drama of Scripture. It's a book that talks about it. And it was like, oh yeah, this is what the Bible looks like. And so I recognized that I was definitely bringing some Adventist like presuppositions to this, but also it's all there. Like, you don't, I didn't have to have the Sanctuary doctrine to get to Sabbath. I didn't have to have it to get to State of the Dead or anything else, or even like an end time ethic of like what's going to get people, what's going to be sort of like an end time marker of people who are saved. I didn't get there through Sanctuary. I got there just through like the overall narrative of scripture. So I think that's where I just see it differently currently. And right now where I'm honestly at is when I look at the belief, and I know this is like weird for me to say, cause I am an Adventist pastor, but I'm probably speaking for a lot more people than would admit it publicly. I'm down with most of it, actually. What I'm ultimately not down with is probably 1844. And
say more.
I don't think that the 1844 calculation and what's supposedly happening there, I'm not currently in a space where I say, yeah, no, totally. That's totally right. And I totally agree with it. I'm not there. I think the rest of it, at least certain interpretations of the rest of it, definitely, I'm there. Like investigative judgment, I mean, it's been used in some really bad ways to like make people feel really guilty. Oh no, like is God judging me?
Yeah.
But when it's I think described in its holistic picture throughout scripture, I'm like, oh yeah, no, totally. I'm there with it. Right. But it's everything that gets filtered through 1844 that I'm like, eh, I'm not there. Mm-hmm. I don't think we get to 1844 based off of one interpretation. There's one key text that everything hinges on there. And it's whether you take the little horn of Daniel 8 to be either, if you take it to be Rome, then it starts to get us to 1844.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it's talking about that. I think it's talking about Antiochus Epiphanes, which is a whole another conversation we'll have to have. Yeah. I don't think it's talking about Rome. And if that's the case, then the whole 1844 thing falls apart.
Yeah.
And so And even then, like, I'm not like 100% it's Antiochus Epiphanes and therefore everything falls apart. However, I'm definitely not convinced that it's Rome. And because of that, 1844, if it does fall apart, basically hinging on the interpretation of that text, then that's an issue. But then second, I think that the idea of biblical prophecy is generally that we see what happens as human beings. We see what occurs in biblical prophecy because it's almost always an opportunity to look back and see that God knew what he was doing, right? It's visual to us at some point so that we can see, oh yeah, God knows what he's talking about. God knew what he was talking, like knew what he was talking about way before it ever happened. And we look back and we see it confirmed. 1844 is completely invisible to any of us. And so this is some of my things. I'm excited to have conversations about this, not in like a ready to prove other people wrong kind of way, but just to hear genuine answers to this. Because that's the part. Everything else, I'm like, yeah, sure, cool. But that one, I'm not there yet.
Yeah. And I think, yep. You know, we're all going to try to be honest as we go through this process of listening and oh, yeah. Trying to break down things like Daniel 8:14. I know, Jesse, we've had conversations about Ezekiel 28 with the King of Tyre.
Is that Discount Tire? Or is it
Discount Tire is fantastic, by the way. Such great prices. I've gone there pretty regularly.
Les Schwab. Les Schwab, 100%.
What if this was our ad break
right now?
Full
service.
I mean, if we got that Les Schwab money, hello.
We just said.
I like Firestone. Firestone is solid.
Really?
We go from Ezekiel 28.
But Costco, Costco sells Firestone tires. So you can just go to Costco.
That's true.
But really? Costco, here's the thing. Here's the thing I found out.
The Discount Tire has used tires.
Well, no, but here's what they have used tires.
Yeah,
why would you buy used tires?
They're only slightly used, so that's why they can discount them so much. So they're like
just a few.
They only have 10,000 miles left on them.
They're like 90% great, but they've been used a little bit.
Just a warning to anybody: Costco. If you go to Costco and get your tires, you cannot. They don't rotate your tires for free afterwards. And so now I'm just a Les Schwab boy. I'm a Les Schwab boy because they do it all for free.
That's interesting because Walmart will rotate your tires for free. They did that for me.
Costco rotates your tires.
I'm a little ashamed I went to Walmart for my tires one time.
I feel like if you get great value tires, there's going to be an issue.
I was in seminary. It was a dark tire. I was poor. You do what you got to do.
So King of Tire, Sean.
King of Tire. Thanks to our sponsors at Les Schwab for the King of Tire sponsorship.
If only.
Says Ezekiel 28 all around the rim.
That'd be the most random sponsorship.
Imagine.
Such a weird, bridge to build with a sponsor.
The King of Tire, for anybody who doesn't know, in Ezekiel 28 is one place where it's said that Ezekiel is talking about Satan, which is also something that I kind of disagree with that he's talking about there. Yeah, so we've disagreed on that, Sean.
Yeah. Again, as I go back to it, I think, Jesse, if you remove 1844, it does open a can of worms that is pretty significant, because then you go into, like, you can, it's like the if this then that game with Adventism, you know, where then you say, well, then, you know, if that's true, then Ellen White's wrong. And if that's true, then, you know,
what does it mean?
Does the Adventist church really matter? Like, were we really spirit led? Like, that was the opening of, you know, when we look at a historical narrative of, you know, church history, we talked to someone on the series, you know, that has that idea of, you know, definitely holds to the idea, you know, 1844 matters. And that, you know, part of that is identifying we're a last day church. So the concept of last day church, concept of remnant, the validity of what Ellen White says, there's a lot that hinges on that being true. And I don't think I've even listed everything there. Obviously, still the way we interpret 2300 days and all the events leading up to that, right? 1798 and the other events leading up to it, it all kind of falls apart for the 2300 day prophecy. And then that's what I mean by like the Adventist sweater. Like you start unraveling it.
This is what I mean though. But this is what I mean is like, is if we're wrong, and I'm not even saying that we 100% are. I'm just saying that's where I'm at right now on that dating specifically. If we're wrong, does it mean that everything falls apart? No. It just means that we have to adjust and refocus on what or re-find out what's important, right? Like we thought we had what was important. Okay, what's important now? And I don't think it changes everything to admit that we got something wrong. I think that it shifts what we focus on for sure. But is that the end of the world? I don't see how it would be.
I'm not saying it's like the end of the world. I'm not saying it's the end of the world, but I will say it would be a major shift. Like it would be a significant
shift
within
Adventism. 100%. Yeah. But I guess my point is though, I would want to be part of a movement that could say, hey, I think we got that one wrong, and then move forward into something good, rather than just holding on to something because, oh no, what happens if we, what happens if that's wrong? I'm not even saying that people are saying like, oh, we know it's wrong, but we're holding on to it. I'm just saying that I think some people are afraid of letting go or hold so tightly to it primarily because of what you're talking
sure.
about.
Sure.
I also think like we're not maybe even fully articulating the level of what's built upon these types of presuppositions, because really, as Sean is saying, like if 2300 Day Prophecy is wrong and Ellen White is wrong, then that does unravel the Ellen White spool of the sweater.
Yeah,
I feel like you just have to establish that's like what traditional Adventism, that's the thing traditional Adventism is built upon.
Yeah, but I guess essentially. What I'm not saying is that it wouldn't be crazy and traumatic.
Right.
And I'm not even arguing that we should do this. I'm just saying, you know, I hear what you're saying, Sean, about if we start unraveling this, potentially, if it was wrong and we started unraveling it, oh no, everything falls apart. It's like, yeah, I mean, it'd be a massive reckoning to have. It would be crazy if it was wrong. But it's also like a movement can survive that and can become something still very much what it was before, but just different. And so I guess that's why I'm not afraid of that idea.
Yeah.
I'm not afraid of that idea.
That's very true.
Though I'm also not saying that it's 100% wrong or anything. Like I'm not at that point.
Yeah.
Well, and I'm just not sold on it yet.
I'll even join you on that side for a bit to say, like, again, we're not going to spend all the time here to go through everything. We're going to break that down in our series, but like looking at Desmond Ford, again, he's an Adventist theologian professor from, you know, especially in the 70s and 80s, was very prominent going to universities and speaking. And he was well known for his books and, you know, stuff on Daniel, Revelation. And he got to a point where he disagreed with the investigative judgment, rejected that as a concept, and, you know, was essentially like excommunicated from the church because he went public with that. And so, you know, when you look at his life though, and you can dig into this a little bit more in different spots, a shout out to Matthew Lucio, Adventist History Project. He's got a series. By the time this releases, I'm pretty sure he'll be pretty much done with that series on Desmond Ford. And I would encourage you to go look at the background of that. But when I look at Desmond Ford, even after that moment when he's rejected by the church, he didn't want to leave. He didn't want to leave the church. He wasn't trying to even necessarily stir up trouble. And I know there's debates on how you feel about Desmond Ford, but he kind of still considered himself an Adventist after the fact of rejecting investigative judgment. So Jesse, in some ways, I relate to what you're saying that, you know, however you feel about Desmond Ford, like he never planned to leave. And so in that sense, there could be a possibility for someone to reject investigative judgment and still remain an Adventist, you know, in some form. But
it's less about rejecting investigative judgment. And it's more like, I think the specific dating was wrong here. I don't think that Jesus moved compartments in the heavenly sanctuary at the specific date. But I don't, you know, at least to me, it doesn't impact what Jesus is doing. It doesn't impact the story of the gospel. To me, it doesn't. To some people, it very much would. And so that's kind of the interesting thing about that. That's why that debate, I know, matters. I'm not trying to say this in a trivial way. Yeah. I'm saying this because this is what I am not convinced on currently. And there's a lot of people out there who feel the exact same way are in Adventist, are hired in the sort of in exact same positions as me, are hired by the conference, all that stuff, but have a struggle with this. And as was the case with Desmond Ford back in the, when was that?
1980.
1980s. And so that's why I'm saying it, because, you know, even if it is right, it's important to recognize that a lot of people don't see it that way. And I think that there's a lot of people who just throw everything out like you've done, or not like you've done, like you've argued would happen.
Yeah.
If, you know, if this falls apart, everything else falls apart. And I'm not in that camp. I'm just like, Adventism is still beautiful, even without this specific thing in it, if that's the case. But I get that that not everybody sees it that way. And I'm still open. Like I want to be. I would love to believe it. So I'm open to the idea. But
it's definitely. Oh, yeah, you go, Eric.
Oh, no, you go first, Anthony.
Well, I was just going to share where I'm at, but I want to hear what you... Well,
does Arnold Palmer have caffeine in it?
No, yeah.
Because this is going to look real bad.
Right? Yeah, black tea.
Sure, black tea, yeah.
Man, this looks real bad now. I'm saying I don't believe in 1844 and I'm drinking caffeine. Yeah, this caffeine. Is a problem.
What a heathen.
Dang.
The Jesuit infiltration at work.
Yeah.
No, okay. So I feel like we've covered sort of, you know, the stakes of the investigative judgment or the sanctuary doctrine being mm-hmm. true or yeah. false. But maybe I could ask, and I'll ask this question to you, Anthony, since you're up next. Why is it important outside of if it's wrong, then Adventism falls apart?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Why Anthony, is it important when it's an inherently a kind of theoretical, unable to be proven theology that's really just like, you know, we're theorizing what's happening in heaven. Why does it matter?
Mm-hmm.
Why should I care?
Yeah, for sure. So
Anthony, could you answer this through the lens of also answering like where you're at on it?
Oh, boy. Oh, okay. Yeah. So I'll start with where I was and then I'll get to that. I'll get to what you just asked, Eric. So for me, I think it's really interesting because my journey has been from kind of definitely where Jesse was for a really long time. I grew up with like lack of clarity on it. I would say I never understood it at all, really, even as a pastor after undergrad, after going through theology. I don't think I understood really what the big picture idea was until seminary. And I think pre-seminary, I was 100% in the camp, all the camps that Jesse's saying. I doubted pretty much the textual integrity of pretty much, I would say, most of the building blocks of the sanctuary doctrine and investigative judgment. There are a few things that I would say, yeah, I can see it. But for the most part, I was like very much on the Antiochus Epiphanes camp, Little Horn, definitely not Rome. Even if I think I kind of felt like it could have been Rome for a time, but it's not anymore. Yeah.
Okay. I don't want to hijack you, but can you just like in 10 seconds explain what Antiochus Epiphany is?
Oh, sorry. That's a big word. Jesse will do a better justice, so I'll hand it over to him. He's a history
basically
buff.
The idea seconds, is,
I just want to know. Yeah.
Basically, in Daniel 7, you have all these things, and it gets to a horn. And that horn, that little horn, is supposed to represent sort of like the papal power that rises up.
At a certain point.
I've heard that.
In Daniel 8, there's a similar progression, but it doesn't have a monster that represents Rome. Out of one of the horns that is supposed to represent the Greek kingdoms that blow into four pieces, there's a little horn that arises out of one of those. Theoretically, I know there's different interpretations, but it's, and so there's, well, it's a little horn, so it must be the same as the one before is one idea. And, or it's like, is the little horn representing a thing that can repeat, but be different entities. But the idea is that, the there's going to be a 30-second version, but the idea of Antiochus Epiphanes, he was the ruler of what's called the Seleucid kingdom. He oppressed the Jewish people intensely, sacrificed a pig in the most holy place, set up altars, tried to ban Judaism. It was a massive thing for the Jews at that time. And so it's a Jewish text. It's, you know, that's where, for me, it's like, it's more likely a Jewish moment that would have been incredibly religiously traumatizing when this guy did all of that to them. And so it seems to represent that to me. But in Adventist thought, it represents, I believe, is it the papal power or is it Rome?
Yeah.
Yeah, papal.
It's Rome, but the papal power within Rome.
Yeah.
Yeah, the papal power within Rome. And that's the idea. And then because of that, you can take the timelines out to 1844.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's that's a whole argument. Like, we'll probably take time later looking at the whole debates back and forth on how the timeline looks. Right. Yeah.
Sorry to hijack you, Anthony. I was just, yeah.
So, yeah. All that to say, I was fully in, like, the camps Jesse's talking about of, like, seriously questioning pretty much all of the building blocks, I would say. Most of the building blocks, rather, of the investigative judgment. And even down to the idea that there is a physical sanctuary in heaven just felt like totally absurd to me. Like, I couldn't, that was a major roadblock for me.
Which is the first line, there is a sanctuary in heaven.
Yeah, it's the first line. There is a sanctuary in heaven. I just felt like that doesn't make sense. So I would say I went from that to probably feeling like, not that Adventism would lose, well, Eric, you asked, why is it important? Why does it matter? Right. Yeah. And I think where I shift, well, first is I think where I shifted to was, first of all, being fully indoctrinated. And by indoctrinated, I mean, I'm on the ship of the sanctuary doctrine for sure. And, but I think why it's important is because the Adventist perspective, I think it's connected to what I was talking about earlier. The Adventist perspective to the text sees a different type of God than any other family of Christianity that comes before, a God who is not first and foremost power, but a God who is first and foremost love. And to me, the sanctuary message is a key component that shows that God actually is love, which ties back to like Ty Gibson's big idea, like God is love, therefore. So I would say sanctuary is one of those, therefore. God is love, therefore, you know, okay. Just like, yeah. So that's why I would say it's important. I think actually it shows probably the one of the most unique and one of the most important and gospel-centric visions of God actually being love than really almost anything else in the Bible, aside from the cross. So, yeah.
Wow.
So,
okay.
So in other words, like, it gives you
Adventist. You saved it with the aside from the cross. You were sounding so Adventist right there. Yep. Dang.
Aside from the cross.
No, that's a big statement, though.
The sanctuary message is the gospel, but it expanded.
So
it's
for you,
it's the same
it
thing.
It's like a very tangible representation of God is love.
It enables Adventists to say with more evidence than any other perspective that God is actually love and he's actually good.
So it's not that
there's
God is love before that, but you're saying it gives us the most
even more
compelling reason to state that as a fact.
Yeah.
But absolutely. There are some caveats to this.
Okay, wait, sorry, Jesse, before you say this. And I think the shift for me was so drastic that I went from like, oh, this is almost definitely not in the text to like, frankly, like, holy crap, like, we're doing way more than anyone else textually. Like, the sheer degree of minutia and scholarly acumen, the sheer degree of thought that's been put into this, the sheer degree of like every question that you could ever have that has been answered, like, frankly, like, it shook me when I was in seminary. So
but there are people who went through the same exact classes as you that have not come out in the same way.
Well, and
you can always make that argument, Jesse. You can make that argument in any class.
No, but my point is
there's people
sure.
that took the same classes as in, oh my goodness. I'm done. Guys, it's late. I got to go to bed.
Try again, Jesse. Or Eric.
It is late. Jarek.
My point isn't that is like a hardcore argument against it. I guess my thing is there are people who have taken those same classes and have said to me, Anthony thinks that. I did not feel the same thing. You know, in that.
Here's the thing. I think what's important too is like the language that's used, because I'm coming from a generation of seminary that was taught totally new language of
sanctuary. No, I'm talking about people like contemporary to you.
Right.
Like other people that we know don't feel the same way.
And I agree with that. That's definitely true. And people disagree. And even for me, like, there's certain things that I push back on where I'm not like fully whatever, you know, things that I'm like, oh, this could be this. I'm not fully like black and white on a lot of things. But the big picture things, like,
yeah, for sure.
You know, Professor Richard Davison, who's like the authoritative voice on sanctuary right now, he just finished like his textbook on sanctuary like a year and a half ago. So mm-hmm. it's like really recent, like his theological kind of treatise on sanctuary. It's not like, this isn't language that's been used really in the Adventist church ever until like a year and a half ago. So that's why for me, he was able to present a compelling vision for me where I was like, oh yeah, I see it.
And that's the other caveat is that I'm sounding very, very negative about this, but this is it very interesting to me is that the language that you're talking about is completely different
yeah.
than the language that is heard anywhere else. Is that
yeah,
fair?
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's why I think this goes back to...
So that's what's interesting about it to me is like,
yeah.
is that the sanctuary doctrine or is that like, is that, I mean, well, is it the same thing?
It definitely brings up the idea that we could have cookie crumbs, so to speak, like breadcrumbs towards an idea and frankly miss it for a lot of years. Mm. Like for instance, something like, oh man, I was about to spoil something. Something that Richard Davidson says is like he doesn't like the term investigative judgment. He rejects that term. He instead yeah. uses the phrase affirmative judgment.
Yeah.
Because judgment is good news. And so but that's a totally different framework than classical Adventism. Mm-hmm. Like classical Adventism, that's different language. And so to me, it illustrates and it brings up an idea that we could have like breadcrumbs towards a theology where we thought we had it, but then we're sort of like shifting. It's not like he's like totally out the window, like it's not Adventism, because it is really a lot of the same stuff, but it's like, I think it's a little closer to yeah. what's actually happening.
You've
in the
likened
text.
It, Anthony, before. You've likened it to the idea of like the American concept of the Constitution.
Oh yeah,
the origins of our country. You know, with that document of the Constitution, the way that we've interpreted it or amended it or added, you know, the way that we truly make all men are created equal and everything else, you know, that evolution happens. That doesn't mean that the Constitution, when it was originally written, was wrong. It just means that those breadcrumbs that were there, the very concepts and foundations of, you know, what America was supposed to stand for and be, it wasn't fully realized or even maybe fully understood at the time when it was written down. But then over time, that evolution took place. Would you say that's a fair? I know that you've kind of mentioned or likened it to that, where you take the concept of the investigative judgment or the sanctuary, and there's an evolving process that takes place in Adventism to how we really take that concept and expand upon it and say, why does this matter?
Yeah.
What is the meaning behind this?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think like we even have a built-in mechanism in Adventism for that, which is present truth.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, that's a built-in Adventist value, which is actually super progressive that doesn't really exist in any other, yeah. like for the Adventist thinker, truth, we don't have the truth. We are learning the truth always. The truth is always being revealed. And so to me, I think there is it is akin to kind of the Constitution. Like, you know, those guys could write, Thomas Jefferson could write those words, but while still owning slaves.
Right, right.
You know, that all men are created
clear,
equal.
He wrote the Declaration of Independence.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Same idea, so, right? Same idea.
I'm Canadian.
But well, sorry, I had to look up. Wait, who wrote the Constitution to make sure yeah. that Thomas Jefferson wasn't in there? Because if not, I was going to feel real stupid.
But yeah, Sean, I absolutely agree that could be a thing. And honestly, I think Davidson is the closest. I think he's the closest to articulating an idea of a God who's even better than we thought he was, in a way that is like gospel-centric and yeah. super compelling.
Yeah.
So,
and here's what I would say is, and we'll talk about this in some of our lead-up episodes, but I will say that the idea that God, and we'll talk about this, that God would be judged by, would allow himself to be judged by others. It's like, I mean, Calvinism is another way of looking at scripture, which is pretty much like God is the highest authority. You can't question him. He does everything how he wants to do. You know, that's pretty much, it has a very high view of God in some really good ways, but this idea of God that would say, hey, I'm going to actually lay out everything I've done before you and you can make judgment calls on this. Like that's pretty compelling. Mm-hmm. Right. So mm-hmm. this is again, where I say, I'm not totally against these ideas or anything like that. For me, it just comes down to that one specific thing, yeah. but it is also interesting because as we've talked, Anthony, and you've talked about, like, man, the way that it's talked about, the way the sanctuary doctrine as a whole is talked about by some of these key people, it's way more compelling. But it's challenging because what they are talking about is so, and it's like the antithesis almost to what has traditionally been talked about, that you're like, those are different things. I mean, I know yeah. they're not actually, but like,
well, in some ways
or,
they are.
Or like at a core level, the starting mm-hmm. points, the text and the interpretations of these texts is not, yeah. it's the same thing. But,
in some ways they are, I think.
Well, I guess what I mean is like the way they're talked about, the language that's being used around a lot of the ideas is different, but the core yeah. idea is similar, or the core starting point at least, but it does feel like different things. And so I guess that's part of the challenge for me as I've listened to you talk about it. I'm like, man, that's just a different thing, you know? So I'm yeah. interested in this whole series because we're going to walk through all of this and talk through, well, pretty much, I guess we can just kind of talk about how we're laying it out.
I feel like maybe a final thought would be, I feel like all of this reveals, and this is really how I felt after seminary, was like, I remember like sitting with Dr. Davison and other professors for literal hours, and I would bring questions on the Hebrew and I'm like, no, this doesn't make sense. Like, explain this, like, help me understand, like, just like for weeks, and like, please, like, I can't see it. And as like, he walked me through, and others, like, they walked me through, I was left feeling at the end, like, holy crap, like, why have I never heard this in my life? Like, why has this never been preached? Why has this doctrine been presented as the opposite of what it actually is? And to me, I think that's symptomatic of all Adventist doctrine. And this is what we talked about with like with Ty Gibson a lot in that last episode of What is an Adventist? Is like, so many Adventist doctrines have historically been presented as the antithesis of themselves. Like, Sabbath has been presented as the antithesis of itself. Sabbath is the gospel, but it's presented as legalism. Like, how does that happen?
Yeah.
You know, and I think, honestly, I think the sanctuary doctrine is exactly the same. And I think that still, even with like where the seminary is now, it still hasn't been presented in a gospel centric way in normal people language. So I think that's really where we're at.
But you believe in the potential, right? The, you know, Ty talks about the latent potential of Adventism, you know, so there's that underlying hope, I think. But yeah, Jesse, you were going to talk about, just really quick, I think as we're wrapping up, just a general breakdown of how we're going to do
the
series.
We're going to kind of split this. We're going to split this into sort of two parts. It'll be the same series, but two parts. We're going to talk about the sanctuary elements of this, and then we're going to talk about the investigative judgment side of it. So they are kind of two parts, because one just is talking about the sanctuary itself and some of the things that Jesus is supposed to do in there. And then the investigative judgment is almost like its own thing. So we use sanctuary doctrine as like an umbrella term, but we also then talk a lot about investigative judgment. There's kind of those two parts. One part is mainly sanctuary and Jesus' work there. And then the other is investigative judgment, which is part of the whole thing, but is like kind of a different thing. Or enough of its own thing that we're going to talk about it separately.
Yeah.
And so we'll have different people on to talk through that. We're going to talk through, we'll have a couple of episodes that set up sort of foundational ideas that we kind of at least have to walk into it with understanding in order to build from there. But I mean, for the most part, we're going to try and separate it into those two things. And it'll be a little bit different than we normally do, because we like to be conversational. We like to have debates and have fun talking about stuff. And that will still be present in this. But there will be parts that are just trying to give us like the walkthrough of the doctrine, so that it's presented for people to understand. And then we'll probably have some like pushback or agreement points, or like, whoa, that's crazy, that's really cool. But it's not meant to be teaching explicitly, but there will be parts of that. So just know that this might feel a little bit different than our podcast is normally, but hopefully it's still good. So
that's better.
That's a hope it doesn't
Hopefully
suck.
Better.
We're going to be spending a long time on this. So you guys, we better have something by the end of this.
Yeah. So actually when we mapped it all out, we realized, spreading all the episodes out, it's probably going to be, well, we'll probably work on this for like the next 3 years of the podcast. So it's going to be every 2 weeks for the next three years.
Buckle up, gentlemen.
I mean, I'm indoctrinated, but I'm not that indoctrinated.
Yeah. I hope our listeners are interested in this, because if not, they're not hearing anything else for like,
we're screwed.
Half a decade.
Yeah, no, it won't be that, but it will be a series of episodes, and we're going to try, some of them might be shorter, some of them might be it might just be a different format across the board, because we're just going to try and do this. We actually, the fun part about this is we started recording episodes on this, and then we're just like, wait a minute,
this topic is way too big
to try.
It's a bigger pie than we thought it was.
Yes. And so so that's what we're going to do. I'm excited about it. Guys, let's make a bet. If I'm right, I get to go to heaven. And if I'm wrong, you guys can, well, and if I'm wrong, Jesus will intercede for me before the Father, and I'll still be there. So
this bet is assuming one of us is God.
No, that's my bet. Is that either way?
Just buy us new tires.
From Discount Tire.
No, I want those new tires.
Are those worth?
I'll get you all great value tires, brother.
Great. They have to be worth at least $2,300.
That's
not $1,844.
No, those are the great value tires.
$18.44. That's what I'm paying. $18.44.
No, that's the 490.
In biblical prophecy, every dollar is actually
every dollar is
$1,000.
Every dollar is
$1,000. So.
Dang,
$23,000.
Those would be like Formula One level tires. Dang.
Yeah, it's
well, guys,
it's late. We're recording another after dark session here.
We're gonna go into this, and we're gonna find out what the deal is with the sanctuary doctrine. I'm excited about it. And
Jesse, imagine if at the end of this you get fully convinced and I get unconvinced.
Just,
I'm like, wait, never mind.
Eric and I pulled that off once on a Facebook post. We took two opposing views.
Oh, I remember this.
And after
was this in the comments?
100 comments, we both switched sides by the end.
Eric's like, yeah, I think you're right. He's like, yeah, I disagree with my original stance.
No. It wasn't even that. It was that they slowly over 100 comments shifted to where now Eric was making arguments that Sean was making at the beginning, and Sean was making arguments that Eric was making. And here's the great part about this. In our friend group, that is one of the funniest. That's one of those things that we talk about is very funny. It's not funny to anybody else. No, nobody saw it. Even the people who are reading through it are just like, what is happening? Like, but it's funny because you guys inconvenienced someone so much with the amount of notifications.
It was just a stranger. It wasn't one of us. It wasn't on our Facebook page. Well, not a stranger. We know who it was. But it wasn't one of us. We were.
they probably know who it is.
It was
who they are.
These were the glory days of Facebook.
Yeah.
Like those,
so
those
all that
era.
Said, these guys who can barely be serious are going to try and have a conversation about the investigative judgment.
By God's grace.
So
yeah, we're gonna try.
Good luck.
Thanks for sticking with us.
Welcome to the party.
Welcome to the party. Hey friends, you've just been listening to another episode of Seeking What They Sought. I'm one of your hosts, Anthony Leiter, and on behalf of all the guys, we just want to say a big thank you to all of you who have come alongside us in our journey to have honest conversations about Adventism. We appreciate each one of you. As usual, if you haven't already, give us a follow on Instagram. It is kind of like our home base, social media-wise, and if you'd like to stay up to date on the episodes that we're posting or just different things that we're doing, you can follow us there. We're also kind of like low-key a meme account, and we post silly videos and other stuff, so give us a follow. We would love it. Also want to say a big thank you to our patrons, and we're really grateful to each one of you for helping us make quality content. So to each one of you, a big thank you. And if you'd like to follow us on Patreon, you can. There's a link in our Instagram bio if you'd like to support us. Thank you so much. last but not least, if you could you leave us a review on iTunes or Spotify, wherever you listen, because it really helps us actually in the algorithm to help new people get their eyes on the podcast. So if you could just go in, give us a little, hopefully a 5-star review, but, you know, be honest, that really helps us just in the algorithm, the way that, you know, these things work these days. So we really, really appreciate it. All right. I think that's it for now, friends. So we will see you next time on Seeking What They Sought.